if you can unpack where people are coming from through very sensible conversation where you've given time to talk about things, what I have learned is almost always conflict has come from some misperception on both sides, allowing people some space to open up, talk very deeply about where they're coming from. And I've learned that you can resolve situations by giving people the time to talk.
Welcome to the Get Unstuck Fast Viscosity podcast, brought to you by VLM training and coaching specialists across the UK and Australia, hosted by me, Vicky Main. Are you a business owner, leader or executive? Have you ever felt stuck or disappointed where your life or business is heading? Do you ever feel overwhelmed, compare yourself to others, or feel like you're swimming in treacle at times? This podcast is here to help you get unstuck fast, from viscosity to achieving escape velocity and expanding your knowledge. Our guests on the show will share practical tips and real-life experience about how they got out of negative situations or circumstances to live their best life on their terms. We will be sharing real-life stories from real people doing some incredible things. Stay tuned for our next guest. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 6 of the Get Unstuck Fast Viscosity Podcast. I'm your host, Vicky Main, and today we have Ed Whittington, Managing Partner from Moore Barlow Lawyers, on the show. And welcome, Ed. It's fantastic to have you here, and especially you are one of the top 100 most influential lawyers voted by the Lawyer Magazine in 2021. So it's great to have you on the show, and very excited to hear more from your journey and what you've been doing.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here and to share some stories from the last few years. So thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. So Ed, can you tell our listeners about your career journey, which led you to where you are now? And then we'll talk more about what you're doing in your role now in a short while.
Yeah, well, very, very briefly, going back a long way, didn't go straight into the law. So, in fact, read history at the University of Edinburgh, and history not being a vocational degree didn't lead me to any particular pathway. And so I did manage to, if I'm honest, draw out my decision making about my career for quite a while, because in Scotland, the degrees are for 4 years. I loved history, still love it now. So it was a wonderful subject to read. But obviously, as I came to the end of my career at Edinburgh, I needed to think about what I wanted to do as a career, and fell into law. I think one of the main drivers, bizarrely, was obviously it's analytical, and I was very used to writing essays and analyzing texts and that sort of thing. But it was more at the time, it was a profession that I thought that I could potentially do in many places. So potentially going to London or in the regions or abroad, it was an avenue by which I thought I might be able to become hopefully as good as I possibly could be in something that effectively would be helping others. And so it just looked to be a good, really interesting, solid career, which I could take where I wanted it to take me in the future. And so it's, yeah, following Edinburgh, I then studied law in London, and actually in the end, having done work experience in a big city law firm, I decided to actually train in a small firm in the regions, because I didn't like the look of the, I suppose, the commitment of the whole to big law is quite extraordinary. And I've got friends who work in big law firms, but the commitment is huge and often goes into the night and weekends. And although I wanted to be extremely good at what I wanted to do, I also wanted to have time to see friends, pursue my hobbies, have a family maybe one day. And in fact, one of the things at the time which I often talk about is I felt a struggle that one had to choose between becoming professionally excellent, so the top of your profession, and having a life. It's always bugged me that there was that choice as a young man. Now, I chose at the time to have a life, because I couldn't see myself in big law for my whole career. So I trained in a small firm. I obviously was not paid very to do that, but I had time on my hands to do other things, and that was my route into the law. I then got going in property, which I loved, because you can go and see what you're transacting. So I didn't really feel massively comfortable in litigation. It was a bit too much conflict for me, but I absolutely loved facilitating deals buying, selling, leasing, and negotiating terms between parties. So got into property law, loved it, as I say, for all of those things, but also just the excitement of going to see what you were transacting, going to look around properties and understanding how they were built, working alongside agents and architects and surveyors. It was something that I enjoyed, and then moved quite swiftly into rural property, which chimed with my background. I was brought up very near my grandparents. My parents are still there. We lived a remote rural life with horses, and I understood that way of life. So rural property was something I found very easy to do, and just enjoyed the clients and loved helping them. And then obviously in professional services, by which I mean accountancy or law or architecture, you're working in a business. They're often partnerships, and moved firm a couple of times. But I found myself a partner in a business, and then our long-standing managing partner retired for some unknown reason. I threw my hat in the ring to take that job and got it. I was voted in at a relatively young age, in fact, at the time, and I think possibly still 6 years later, I'm the youngest managing partner of a 100 law firm. So I was very young. I didn't know what I was doing, if I'm honest. I didn't understand really how to run a business, but that's quite common in a partnership, because you work your way out the ladder doing your day job as a lawyer or an accountant, and then somebody then has to run the business. And so it's been an incredible learning journey over the last 6 years as to how to lead a business, how to lead the people, how to develop a vision and get buy-in. And obviously we did a merger in the middle of the pandemic. So yeah, that's my career journey so far.
So adding to that, you mentioned about at the start, and I loved what you said about you wanted to have a life as well as your career, which I think is a really good philosophy. And I know for myself, working in the education field for many years and then running my own business, I was raising my family and I had lots of external hobbies that I love to do. So it's having that balance. And I know people say, well, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. But I think if you constantly work, then there's no respite and time off. But I guess being the leader in I, and I know this wasn't a scripted question, but I am intrigued because of your philosophy around being aware that outside of work, you have those external pursuits and you have your family as well. Do you think that translates into your leadership style of expectations that you appreciate that people are there in the workplace, but then they also have things outside of work? So the pressure of being working in your field, in your industry as a leader, do you see that you instill a culture of also it's okay to switch off at a certain time, if you know what I mean, and have some time off work?
I would very much hope so, In fact, it goes beyond all of that in the sense that I've made it my mission to create a firm where we could strive and hopefully achieve the highest degree of professional excellence whilst having some whole life, bigger life around that. It may be children, it may be with friends, it may be with a partner, it may be with a hobby, just something extra. It was always going to be important for me. And I think what I found at Morbala was a number of people who had made, strangely, a similar decision along the way. And we were able to bind together and make this part of our DNA. And it's in the heart of the firm. We've created one of our values is human first. Purpose is to make a difference. We have coined the phrase, or we've latched onto the phrase, career firm. So we're trying to be the leading career firm. What we mean by that is a firm in which you can have a long, sustainable career. You hopefully don't get burnt out like some of my friends, if I'm honest, have been. You can work into your 60s, even 70s. You can be a mother all the way through partnership. And we're very proud of the fact we're 50-50 in our partnership, female to males. So equal, and we have many
fantastic
mothers who are balancing their legal careers with being a parent. And equally, the men in our firm, certainly myself, we are ones trying to play a role at home, and obviously don't always get that perfect, if we're honest, but we're certainly not the fathers coming home at 11 at night and leaving at 6 a.m. the following morning. That's not really acceptable to any of us within our firm, and something I could, if I'm honest, I could never have really done. Having said that, I love work. It's a fundamentally important part of my life.
Yeah.
It's just not everything. There are other things. Always have been for me, always will be. Passion about horses, my children, Lizzie, my wife. We try and live a rich, varied, fulfilling life living in the country. we both work hard as well.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah, yeah, I love that philosophy around your work and being aware as a leader that those things are important to others as well. And I love that you said it's in your DNA around being a firm that helps people progress through their career. So I can imagine that you retain your staff quite well along the way. Tell me a little bit more about your role as a managing partner and as a leader. And I know you've been doing it now for, did you say 6 years in total, or is it a little bit longer than that now?
Yeah, 6 years. Yeah. Yeah. 6 years.
Tell me a bit more about your role as a leader and perhaps challenges along the way or things that you've learned along the way as being a managing partner for anybody who is aspiring out there to progress in that role.
It's been the most incredible learning curve, if I'm honest. You become reasonably well rehearsed in your day job if you're a lawyer after probably 4 to 5 years. Experience counts for quite a lot, and 4 to 5 years you start to think, okay, I can't second guess everything that's going to happen, but I know who to ask. I'm enjoying this. And I certainly enjoyed the law more as I got more experience. I felt more confident with the way I was guiding clients. But then to change overnight and effectively give up the client work or run a business, it was a dramatic change and not something I'd ever anticipated would be so difficult. And I have faced so many profound challenges that have tested me to the absolute limit and gone through many moments like that, also some great highs as well. I think possibly the best advice I was ever given, and you'll like this as the coach, because I have had a coach since almost day one.
Yeah,
in right. this role. So somebody experienced, somebody listening to me, somebody getting me to turn things around. And there was this amazing guy that coached me at the beginning, a couple of people actually, but one of whom said something that I've never forgotten. And actually the other one also said something I've never forgotten. The first one was from an American guy that worked for Microsoft, and he was taking a coaching degree outside of work. And when you do a coaching degree, you have to have guinea pigs. So I think he had 10 of us and we didn't pay. We were just sure. his guinea pigs. But suddenly I had the privilege of being able to learn from a guy who was very senior in Microsoft and had learned all this leadership wisdom and had 30 years of practical experience as well. And we were having great difficulty in the early days with cash flow. Had actually reasonably profitable business, but one that's suffered from cash flow problems. And I was just tearing my hair out one day, and he said, "What? Just reflect on this. What could this give you?" Could not come up with the answer. I was just so bogged down in stress, and he had to give it to me in the end. He said, "Look, Ed, this is a huge opportunity, because if you're the one who turns this round, you'll be able to look back and feel amazing about that." Mm-hmm. And I just walked out of the room a completely different person. And I started to say to everyone around, I said, "Crikey, actually, you know, this is an opportunity." It's one tiny moment of somebody just facilitating the way your brain works and resetting your mindset can set you on this totally different path.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre and difficult for possibly some people to even comprehend, but it's true. And so I owe great thanks to the people who have helped me over the years.
Yeah.
And I could not recommend more highly finding a coach and that discipline of coaching once every couple of months or once a month, having somebody to talk to and problems through. And I think in terms of getting unstuck, it's somehow changing the mindset that actually the problem you're stuck in can be objectively seen as an opportunity to find your way out.
Yeah.
And then a reward.
Yeah.
Because I've been back there a number of times, but my goodness me, it's a very powerful thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there are like opportunity, even the word, it's having that mindset to go, right, okay, let's not focus on the problem, focus on the opportunities around that. And I think that's such great advice for any area in life or in business. And I know having ran my own businesses, cash flow is king. It sounds cliche, but it is. And it can put an awful amount of stress on the people who are leading there and going, right, okay, this could turn into a big problem if we don't look at the opportunities and look at how we can explore those further. So I love that. Let's talk a bit more about mindset. And are you fearful of anything, Ed? Or is there anything that, I know some people are very, some people are fearful of massive success and some are fearful of failure, but I asked this question on the podcast and I'm curious, what are you fearful of?
I'm most fearful I think of conflict, and I've had to work incredibly hard over the years to face up to conflict with people and dealing with situations where you have to deliver news that you know is not going to be well received. Yeah, I really, really struggle with it, but getting better with practice. And the truth is that if you do face a conflict, shortens, it's resolved more quickly. So there's this weird irony in there somewhere. I really just struggled with that my whole life, I would possibly say, actually.
Yeah, there was a period of time I did too, and I would avoid conflict. So I was very avoidance my style. So I would just go off and bury my head. Whereas I guess in the role that you held when you were not necessarily a managing partner, but as a lawyer, you would have had to negotiate and deal with potential conflict situations with parties all of the time. But I guess if you weren't the person that they had conflict with, perhaps it was easier to deal with being outsider, was it not?
Yeah, exactly that. You'd think that you'd be in conflict a lot as a lawyer, but strangely, it's a transactional situation where it's actually your clients who are trying to achieve something you're facilitating. And in fact, rarely in a position where you actually have to stand up to somebody and criticize somebody, or you could tell somebody a home truth that they know they don't want to hear. That doesn't really happen because it's just a carefully crafted situation with. So yeah, coming into a leadership role where in fact your job is to manage a team, manage lawyers, some of whom may not like what you're doing or what you say, or some of whom are not performing. Conflict is there almost daily and it has to be worked through. And yes, it's impossible to avoid it, actually. But still, just as a person, I'm fearful of it. That probably never go away.
Yeah, I have been doing a bit of research into the conflict space recently. And what I was particularly interested in is around everybody has hot buttons, things that will trigger them if there is conflict situations. And interestingly, I've just been recently qualified in the conflict dynamics profile tool. So you can actually see when you complete a questionnaire where your hot buttons and triggers are. And for me, one of my triggers would be if I was micromanaged, for example, I would find that really hard, like difficult to. But then again, I do like analytical. I'm quite analytical. I'm curious for you, what would be your hot buttons? And are you fairly relaxed and laid back? What would trigger you or in a conflict situation, which would really get you either really angry or upset, or what would trigger you? I'm just curious.
I'm a very certainly externally very laid back person. I do actually very rarely get very cross or angry, and that has huge drawbacks as well. So it's not something to madly brag about. It's just true. And it was during my childhood as well. It takes a lot for me to get angry. Occasionally I do with my kids, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
But in the workplace, I think spobulates me most is direct criticism. Again, it's around feedback, and it's always absolutely fine once I've digested things. It's hard. I find it very hard to take care of feedback. It doesn't necessarily make me angry. It's just really fries my brain and think clearly in the moment. But I have worked things out over the years, certainly with other people and their trigger points. I think for me, there are a couple of key things that I always hold very closely when dealing with people in a team. And the first one is just appreciating and acknowledging that we're just so different. And the cyclical profiling proved to us that some people are very detail-oriented. Some people are very good at empathy. There are all these different profiling ways of bringing this to life, the insights and various other things. And I actually think they're incredibly helpful just by simply acknowledging that there may just be conflict just because the way people process things very differently. Actually fine with that. And as soon as a group of people can acknowledge the fact that they're all coming from slightly different way of processing things, there's no point being angry. And I think it's normal for people to get upset. And the other thing is what I find very, very helpful is looking at each person's context. So not just the way they are psychologically processing, but what is their context? And if you can unpackage people's context, you can say, well, of course you're worried about that because you're actually worried Your context is you're worried about the business going on. Well, my context is I'm worried about somebody leaving.
Yeah.
If you can unpack where people are coming from through very sensible conversation where you've given time to talk about things, what I have learned is almost always conflict has come from some misperception on both sides. So allowing people some space to open up, talk very deeply about where they're coming from. And I've learned that you can resolve situations by giving people the time to talk.
Sure. I think that's great advice. And because I know from doing my research and from reading and studying conflict resolution and negotiations and some tips towards it, there are constructive ways of dealing with conflict, but also destructive ways of dealing with it as well and not fueling the fire, so to speak. But I love what you said there about the context and looking at the different viewpoints and seeing how and acknowledging that communication styles can really, like different ways to communicate with different people can really help in that space. So I think that's really interesting. What would you say from your experience being a leader? What do you think are the main top three things for being a leader, the most important skills that you would say for anybody who's in a leadership role from what you've seen and from your experience?
From my experience, I think if you are yourself and you're not trying to be somebody else, it can be inconvenient because if you are just following intuition, which is what I try and do, generally speaking, you do what you say, what you're going to do. If you're worried about something, you admit that you're worried about something. If you're really excited about something, you look really excited about something. And I think, generally speaking, if you are genuinely, from the inside, optimistic, confident about the future, even when things are collapsing around you, unbelievably challenging situations, if you're able to step back and think, okay, no, my gut feeling is we're going to be fine. And if you really believe that, or if things are worrying you, you say to people, I'm really worried about this. I think people gravitate. They gravitate to that genuineness, if that's a word. So yeah, that would be one thing. I think I've mentioned optimism. I do think it's important. There are always two ways of looking at things. You can either be negative or positive. It doesn't matter how bad it is. You can still be positive.
Yeah.
Anyway, if the leader is looking at a negative situation and being incredibly negative, it doesn't really help get through that negative situation. Whereas if the leader's saying, you might want a negative person in the team saying, well, actually, if you do that, you're going to go. But actually, the leader is saying, we can get out of this. Let's look at solutions.
Yeah.
Come on. I think that's key for me anyway, when I'm looking at people who are in leadership positions around me. And I think the final thing for me is just having fun and sense of humor. So for me, that's just so important because it's no point being miserable all the time. Okay. Nobody wants to be miserable. Most people want to have fun. They want to laugh. And I think that can be infectious and raise the tempo and lead to a better, higher performance.
Yeah. So, and Sure. I love what you've said there about the positive approach as well as a leader. And I've just written a book with Jonathan Bean, my co-author, and called The Momentum Mindset. We talk about mindset around positivity in the book. And it is so easy to be, I guess the one thing that I've learned over the years is I put myself in a position where I want to show up for anything in life. It could be anything, but you put yourself in this mindset of going, right, how do I want to show up today? And if you have that positive, optimistic, and also that opportunity-led approach, if you like, it makes the day more enjoyable. It really does. Whereas I'm not suggesting I get up every day and go, yay, life's brilliant. There are moments where you go, oh yeah. And then I think, well, I'll take myself off to the gym for an hour or I'll go and do something nice for myself so that at least I don't put anybody else in a mood where my own mindset is rubbing off on them, if you like. So I think it's being aware of your own mindset, and especially when you're working in that team and being a leader, is being able to have that. There is a ripple effect. Whatever you do as a leader, there is going to be a ripple effect. And if you're building a culture of a fun environment where it's a great place to work and you having that mindset of being positive, then people will come to you and they will open up about certain things and share things as well. And yeah, I love what you said about being authentic as well. So I think that's great. What would you say in terms of tips, more tips for resilience and getting over setbacks? How would you advise people as a leader, is there anything else that you would help them to get over those certain things? Is there anything else you would share?
Yeah, I think one of the things I haven't really said so far is that through experience, you learn that it's always fine. So it sounds like a weird thing, yeah, but it always is.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. It doesn't almost matter how bad a situation is, and this is in a business context, how worried you are about something, how something can be presented to you as the worst thing that ever happened. It's almost always fine. And I think just remembering that, acknowledging that, recognizing when you're incredibly worried and frustrated or stressed, just remembering that experience tells us that very shortly the sun comes up, again it goes down, and it's extraordinary how quickly one can be in a better place, however worried you are about something. That's happened to me so many times, it's unbelievable, and every time I think, oh no, this just can't get any worse, it's fine. And actually, as a result, yeah, I'm a lot more balanced. I don't go on a roller coaster at all anymore, and I think the more people can appreciate that, and the more people in leadership who are happy to admit that things go up and down and share that, the better.
Yeah.
Because it always is. And at the moment, being coached by a person who's very much about leading from the inside first and then out. So just being comfortable with who you are, what you're doing, happy in life, and a calm, just presence. Person that enjoys what they do is not going to enter the drama, because there's just so much drama. If you know about the Cartman triangle, victim, persecution, rescue, victim, persecution, they get distracted from the real difficulty by saying it's somebody else's fault, or, oh, there's nothing I can do because that person did this. And it's all drama. And I think if you can recognize that more quickly, because we all get sucked into it, just saying, hold on, what is actually the real issue? Let's think about the real issue. Just trying to remove yourself from that drama. It is something I'm finding incredibly helpful.
That's really useful information. And I love the analogy of the triangle as well, to look at different, putting yourself the helicopter view and what is really the problem here at the root cause of the problem. I'll think about the analogy of the circle, where you go, what am I actually responsible for here? How can I perhaps change my behavior in a situation to get the best possible outcome for everybody involved, whatever that may be? And I think by just looking at what your own responsibilities are, I think that does help as well, rather than worrying about what other people, because we as human beings, we cannot really be responsible for everybody else. I mean, yes, unless it's children, I guess there's a level of parents and children there, but that awareness piece of, as a grown adult, people have to take responsibility for their own actions. But sometimes people don't want to, because it maybe is too hard. maybe they just don't have that self-awareness. But I really love what you said there, Ed, about give me some food for thought to think about that and reflection as well. So let's talk about, what does the future hold for Moore Barlow Law Firm? Where would you love to see? What does success look like for your team? For yourselves.
Well, I mentioned early on that we merged in the pandemic. In fact, just as it was unfolding, we didn't quite know whether to commit to a major merger, and we did. And we spent the last 3 years since May 2020, I suppose, integrating two businesses and creating a new one, virtually with a blank canvas in everything from brand to HR and people systems, our culture, our values, financial systems, almost everything you can think of is being redesigned and implemented in the last few years. And it's been incredibly hard. Not everyone has been on board, which is very common in mergers. And those that have not really felt the future have gone, and those that have wanted to stay are on board. And now we got people wanting to join, which is an amazing feeling. And I think now is the time to think expansively again, fire up growth and look for opportunities. We're very fortunate, I think, that the people are starting to want to join our firm, and we may be involved in a few more mergers, but keep it exciting, keep doing things, keep moving forward, don't tread water. There's been a period of consolidation and hard work, but I think now the future involves growth, but sticking to our values. That's the main thing. That's a huge thing for us. So, yeah, we'll just be trying to do more of what we know we do well.
Well, I wish you all the best with your team as well and future mergers. It sounds a very exciting time for your company and what you're doing. Where can people reach you? You're on LinkedIn and...
Yeah, on LinkedIn.
Where can they reach you if they want to find out more?
Well, LinkedIn or the Morbalo website, it's all, yeah, I'm very, very accessible and people are welcome to reach out if they think I might be of some use. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you for your insights. I've really enjoyed our discussion. And if anybody does want to reach out to you, they can do via LinkedIn or your website, as you said. And I look forward to seeing all of the successes as they and you're sharing your good news stories on LinkedIn in the future and watching your journey as a leader.
Thank you, Vicky. And good luck with your book. It looks great. And I need to put it on the list.
Oh, thank you. I'll send you a copy. I really appreciate that.